Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Happ hits a fly ball to left. This ball is going to be caught by Benson, and the ball game is over. The Reds beat the Cubs on this Friday afternoon. The final score, 9-0 Cincinnati.
Sucks to be them. That was Friday. That was yesterday. Right here on these very airwaves. Oh, my God. There was a part of that game, not the part where they were kept getting no hit, but there's a part of that game that I want to bring you later that I thought was just wonderful. It was exactly what, when you have a warm day, when you're listening to baseball on the radio, it was what baseball on the radio should be. Meanwhile, Saturday Suckage on the radio, 708 texter, do your boy. I don't always get to listen to weekend radio, but when I do, I'm glad it's Saturday Suckage. I see what you did there. A lot of people weighing in on the Scottie Pippen comments, largely agreeing, selfish. Phrase asshat was used in one of the texts, and I'm not disagreeing with any of that. Someone made the point, yeah, wait, how is he still selling bourbon if not for The Last Dance? Talk about being relevant. I wish I'd said that. That's texture, that's the highest compliment I can pay. Is it good enough to steal? That's the way it works in this business. Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage. We're going back to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome to the show from Cubs Insider, the editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider. He is Evan Altman. Evan, talk about this team that has climbed to within six games of 500 and... what are we doing here?
Oof. Yeah. Do we have to talk about the Cubs?
Yes, we do.
I can go in on Scottie Pippen. Oh, okay.
Somebody who named his site Cubs Insider is rarely brought on to talk about Pippen bashing. I mean, we could certainly do that. Everybody gets a shot at the Pippen pinata. We can do that at the end. However, now, are we at the point where the Cubs season is so dire that Justin Steele is never allowed to have a bad outing and ever, anywhere, anytime? Is that what it's come to?
Well, you know, the thing about it, it's probably good. It's not good that he had a bad outing, right? But it's not like it would have mattered when you're getting no hit through most of the game and nobody seems to be able to do anything offensively. He could have pitched a gem and it probably would not have mattered at that point. So maybe it's good. It kind of obscured what looked certainly on paper was a really questionable lineup against a guy in Hunter Green who has massive reverse splits. Right? It was just a very, and I know they're privy to more data than what we are on the outside. And there's a lot of other factors that go in, you know, who's feeling good today. Maybe somebody's nicked up a little bit and they have to sit. But it just on the surface, when you see things like that, and this has happened kind of frequently, it looks at times as if whether it's the roster or the lineup, there are enough flaws in there that, as you said, if there's a slip up from the starter, and we've certainly seen those from a few of the starters, they're already apparently at a disadvantage. So there's just not much margin for error with this team. And I think we saw them performing at a really, really high level early, like better than what anybody expected. Now they're kind of at the worst end of that. The water will find its level. This team is not what they were in April. They're not what they are in May. Maybe June will see them kind of even out a little.
Evan Altman is my guest, Cubs insider. You're listening to some Cubs talk here on The Score. We'll have the Cubs game for you, 5:40 this afternoon as a pregame, and they'll play the evil, dreaded Reds again. So explain the reverse splits and go back to what you believe. Is it David Ross's fault? You think David Ross doesn't understand numbers and math and that kind of stuff? Because stories are the Cubs will print out 200 pages worth of why your lineup should be like this. So what do you think is taking place?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so when we look at somebody, you know, normally, right, a right-handed pitcher is going to perform better against right-handed batters and vice versa with lefties. But Green, at least heading into yesterday, righties were hitting 320 against him with a 983 OPS, and he had allowed 8 homers. He still only allowed 8 homers because the Cubs obviously didn't put one out on him. And 6 of those were hit by righties, you know, but the Cubs had, not only did they have 5 left-handed batters in the lineup, but Mike Tauchman was kind of inexplicably moved up to the 3 spot. And then he had at the bottom of the order was Mervis, Mastroboni, and Tucker Barnhart. So the 3 lefties, 7, 8, 9, you know, rolling over into the top. So it didn't appear to be a lineup that was constructed to be able to do damage. Now, part of that, Green doesn't always last very long. He's not the most efficient pitcher. So maybe they're thinking, hey, we want to try to, hopefully once we get past him, which again, they clearly didn't, and that didn't work. You know, maybe they were hoping to get into one of the bullpen arms from the Reds, who's no good against lefties. I don't know, but I feel like that kind of chess is moving a little too far forward. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at saying, well, okay, but Patrick Wisdom is, you know, like 0 for the last 2 weeks and not always great against high fastballs. Okay, so maybe we switch that up. You get some guys who put in a good plate appearance, wear them down. There's a ton of data that they've got that goes way beyond what I can look at when I look at the splits on FanGraphs. But on paper, it didn't look great, and then we saw those results kind of borne out in the result of the game.
Looking at that division, do you wish the Cubs were in the AL East? Because then there would be no contest, and they would be more focused. Do you think that they're in that front office with a team that was built on defense and pitching, old school? They saw Jed Hoyer saw great value where other people didn't. You know, this money, so Moneyball approach still works in that identifying an undervalued spot and buying all the stock you can. And this pitching and defense is really good in cold weather. And now it's going to start warming up. Even before it really started warming up, the Cubs gave up 9 to the Reds. Do you think that there's a, maybe scattered approach is the wrong phrase, but maybe there's too much, there's a distraction, there's the threat of, God, we could really compete because the division's so bad. What would we have to do that? But that might get us away from what we're really headed. Do you think there's some of that going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to be said for the idea that good is the enemy of great. That, you know, if you only have to do good enough, well, then what's, you know, that may prevent you from taking that next step. But I think there's also the idea that it is, you know, baseball, unlike, let's say, the NFL, where parity is king and you can really turn it around quite a bit faster, you know, with a great draft and a couple of timely signings. It's really tough to turn things around from where the Cubs were. And I do think there's an idea that, you know, the current they're swimming against right now is not that strong. Right, they've lost 2 in a row. They've lost no ground in the division despite losing. All these teams are kind of bunched up in the middle, and Milwaukee isn't going to run away with anything anytime soon. So, you know, you do get that idea that maybe looking forward to the schedule in June, maybe this isn't a great plan because they started out, I mean, they end this month with the Rays, and then they start out with a 10-game roadie out to the West Coast for June. But if they turn things back to even something close to April, you know, you can get in there, you can make some noise, and maybe that creates a buy trade at the deadline, and that gains a little bit more momentum. So I don't know that it'd be better for them to be in a tough division, because at that point, then do you see any progress? Does that look even worse? And then there was really no hope whatsoever. So I like the idea that they could still make noise. Right. And I sincerely hope that's the case. But I do think that they put themselves in a position to where there's precious little margin for error. And right now we're seeing that on just about a daily basis.
Well, I was hoping the Angels would be worse than they are. They're remarkably four games over 500. And I never really expected that. And I had lobbied 2 months ago for them to trade for Shohei Ohtani. Certainly they got the billionaire who's got the money. It's whether he wants to pay it or not, because you're paying for a number three hitter and a number one pitcher. And the Cubs need both of that. They need left-handed power. They need, what do you think it would take? Let's just play this game. What do you think it would take if they were going to trade Shohei Ohtani?
Boy, it would be a lot, obviously. I mean, I think you're looking at a combination of if we kind of pick from the top of the start from Owen Casey, I'm sure the Angels would ask for Pete Crow Armstrong. That's, I think, an obvious ask. I think the Cubs would be very reluctant on that side. But you're looking at some guys like Owen Casey. Brennan Davis has lost a little bit. I think Miguel Amaya is not a guy they'd want to move. But then you start looking at, how about Ben Brown? How about Hayden Wesneski, right? Some of these top pitchers. And then you're looking at guys like Kevin Alcantara, right? That's somebody, a top outfielder they're going to have to be looking at. I think you're a minimum 4 to 5 prospects, probably a major league ready guy, at least one. I mean, it's going to take a lot. And then, you know, bear in mind, it's not just the trade. You're going to have to be fully convinced that you can sign into an extension, mm-hmm. because of the position the Cubs are in right now. It does them zero good to have a slightly better shot at the postseason of doing anything. And then if you lose him, and now you lost all of those 4 or 5 prospects in the works. You know, the other side is you're going to have to pay the guy $500 million. So at this point in the game, I don't know that it makes much sense for him just because of the added cost that it's going to take. And then if you lose all that, now you're kind of starting back over to where they were a few years ago. But it will, the haul, if he's traded, the haul will be massive.
Well, that's fine. Every time I hear about these kinds of things, and I know that you can be the Angels have been crappy with Trout and Ohtani. They're less crappy this year. So I know that it could be it could bottom out. You could just be awful and you could have this wonderful showpiece and nothing else to go with it. But I keep thinking about the time the Bulls, and I'll let you rant on Pippen in a moment, but I remember the time the Bulls were in play for Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. And people were, oh my God, but you can't give up Luol Deng. And it's like, oh my God, seriously? Okay, Pete Crow Armstrong, I'll drive you to the airport. I'll be your Uber driver. I'm getting the greatest ball player in history. I'm going to start there. The fact that they did nothing with the Angels, and they did it with the greatest, you know, with Mickey Mantle 2.0 with Trout, just means the Angels are bad and stupid. They're badly run. Now I'm going to give the Cubs more credit for that. But the idea of like, well, I don't know about Pete Crow Armstrong. I don't know about giving up, right? He's a guy, when you talk about the greatest ball player of all time, he's got an ERA and he's got a batting average and he bats third. It's like, how could you not do this?
Oh, and I fully agree. I mean, I think, and the other thing that's, you know, if you talk about the value, not only on the field, but how many tickets is this guy going to sell? How big is he going to make your team in the Japanese market and other Asian markets, right? Where in the Cubs have experienced some of that in the past, but this is a guy who's going to put butts in seats, put eyeballs on the television day in and day out because he's playing one role or another, maybe both, every day. I mean, it's incredible. And so I'm all for it. I think the issue is, especially with the Cubs, right? If you're a team that's kind of on the border right now, maybe getting a little bit better, can you lock that in? You only make that trade if you know for certain you can extend him before the end of the season and lock him in. And if they can do that, yeah, give him whatever they want because he's worth it.
Okay, now before I let you go, Evan, Evan Altman is my guest, Cubs insider, but everybody gets a swing at the Pippen pinata, so go!
Man, I would love to say all kinds of nasty things, but I just, dude's got to be in a bad place, though, because when you're out there saying Michael Jordan was a horrible player before I got there, I mean, he's just unserious. I think that's the problem I have with it. It's like, we've crossed over into just, come on, man, Michael Jordan was a horrible player. Sure, buddy.
Okay.
You know, so when maybe if we get the Ben Affleck and Matt Damon treatment of the Scottie Pippen story, maybe that's coming out next year, you know, the sequel to Air, and they can just do it and show how Pippen's a couple years. I mean, hey, he won the All-Star Game MVP, right? He scored like 33 points in that one All-Star Game without Jordan. So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for you, Scottie. I hope you're still in that bourbon.
Well, after they do Air, they'll do Airhead, and that's how we'll do this thing. Evan, thanks for your time.
Thanks for your time.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah.
Evan Altman, Cubs Insider, CubsInsider.com. Talking Cubs here. We're going to take a break. We're going to get back to Bears. Bears, my friend, for the man who covers the Bears for the Score. We'll talk offensive line and Justin Fields and what he heard, what Mark heard. We'll ask Mark what he heard, and Mark Grody will tell us. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Oh, hi, Mark.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
We're just going to let the music go until Mark shows up. That's what we're going to do. Dirty Frank. Well, let me tell you about our broadcast plans. Memorial Day weekend. Tune in on Memorial Day, Monday, as we are live from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with Steve Rosenblum. Hey, I know him. And Mike Esposito. Hey, I know him too. And then at 10 to 12:45, The Score brings you Mark Grody. Hey, I know him. Cubs will play the Rays. Pregame starts at 12:45. Gabe Ramirez will be following the Cubs postgame until 8 p.m. Download the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Search 670 The Score and hit play. Plus, you can find us, The Score, on your smart speaker. Just tell your device to play 670 The Score. And we're going to play Where's Mark? Did we find Mark? Caesar, did we find Mark? Mark!
Steve!
Look at that.
I could do you one better, too, about the Memorial Day holiday on Monday. Not only will you and Espo be hosting a show together, mm-hmm. and I will be hosting the show at 10 o'clock, as you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
but I have been told as well that we will be doing the traditional transition. So I will get to talk to you and Esposito on Monday morning. So that is something to look forward to.
Well, we're talking now. Is this practice?
Is this like
the pregame? Is this a transition pregame?
Can we slide Espo in? Let's just try a little Espo. Then we'll get him in, get him out, be like, okay, it's like a wedding rehearsal. It's not going to be too formal.
Right.
We're gonna be loose about it. But then come Monday, everybody better be ready.
Right. Wow. Transition. It's serious stuff. Speaking of serious stuff, Bears.
Yes. Let's talk Bears.
So Mark Grody was up there. They did the OTAs. They're doing the OTAs. They show up, then they don't show up, and then they show up, and they practice against Air. And what is it? What jumped out at you? What was important or what's worth following? What do you give some credibility, some credence to?
Well, it was good to see DJ Moore out there and just his presence. I mean, there isn't a ton that's going on in terms of the actual scrimmages or 7-on-7 because so much of it is just position group stuff. But to see his presence and to just kind of see a guy who already kind of looks like he knows what he's doing and integrating well into the team, and then go out there for whatever it's worth. There was a really nice connection between Justin Fields and DJ Moore on about a 40-yard play to the sideline, a double move by DJ Moore, and Justin Fields hit him there. So I just love the instant credibility, the instant this guy knows what he's doing, and that is different from what the roster that the Bears built last year, where you're trying to figure out who these guys are, what they can produce, and if there's anything in them to be productive at all. Immediately this year, I just think DJ Moore is symbolic of, okay, things are different. This is not necessarily a playoff team or a winning team, but suddenly there's your John Lester. You know what I mean? There's your John Lester walking out there and like giving credibility maybe to a team that's a little bit early, but it was good to see him out there. And also, quite frankly, it was really cool to see Tremaine Edmonds. You know, I mean, we've seen him play for Buffalo. We know that he is a good linebacker. It was good to see him having fun out there and really showing, like, being very vocal, leadership role, and making an interception as well. And then he talked, too, afterwards about how he is in, likes the idea of being a leader and then, you know, was respectful towards the other guys in that regard. So I think that there, you know, to sum it up and what stood out at OTAs, just a different credibility on the field, I think, is what stands out, Steve.
And that's important. That's great. Is it too early to start asking Tremaine Edmonds about comparisons to Justin Fields and Josh Allen? Should we do that already?
No, I think we should do that. I think we should also ask Tremaine Edmonds about his comparisons to Brian Urlacher, because Tremaine Edmonds is also like Brian Urlacher, tall. He's 6'5",
and
he's fast, and then that means that he is involved.
And middle linebacker.
Well, Edmonds is not bald. He's got very long hair,
that's
actually.
Right, he does.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of.
Okay. I'm not sure who you're thinking of, but yeah, Tremaine Edmonds has extra hair. He's got great hair, actually.
Yeah.
So that's his thing. But I mean, the comps to Urlacher are always hilarious and all that kind of stuff. But we'll see. I mean, like I said, it's credibility. I don't know if they're going to be good, but there is a different credibility on that field.
Well, that's a nice part of it. I would ask you about I'm glad to see, as DJ Moore said, it just pitch and catch after that, though, on that one play that you referenced.
No problem.
But is that whoever he put the double move on, is that guy going to be in uniform, or is that guy is that guy going to be asking you on paper or plastic on that?
You know, I don't even know. There's 90 guys out there, so there's a lot of guys who might be asking paper or plastic at some point in time.
Yeah. So the offensive line, we know, I believe we know what it looks like, right? It's Jones, Jenkins, Whitehair, the proxy for Nate Davis is.
Probably Nate Davis. It was Jatari Carter, the second-year man.
And then the draft pick. And that's the way it's going to go.
You're not going to say his name
until the draft pick.
Number 58.
Red Fisher, the legendary writer for the Montreal Gazette, refused to interview any Canadians rookies. They had to be in their second year.
He refused to interview any Canadian.
And then all of a sudden, Patrick Waugh is the goaltender for a team going to the Stanley Cup finals, and he had to talk to him. Patrick Waugh, yeah. That rookie. He's over there.
I'll tell you, the weirdest thing about Darnell Wright, and we could talk about where they're using him and all that kind of stuff, but he's number 58. That's a wild number, because it's a pretty, like, 58 was Roquan Smith's number. 58 I'm having a total mental block on one of my favorite, Wilbur Marshall. Wilbur Marshall was 58. Yeah, so it's like, it's an odd number to see him out there. But Darnell Wright, I mean, the thing about him in the OTA, what I liked about it and what is a little bit different from last year is that they're not screwing around with him. He was put right in at right tackle. There was nobody ahead of him. They're not like, oh, we're going to keep the rookie second string for now. Oh, we're going to pop him around. We're going to try him at left tackle. We know we're going to throw him inside. No, they put him right at right tackle, and I get it. It's just one OTA, and that's all we get. We get one OTA a week. You know, they practice a few days a week. We get one day to watch these guys. So take it all with a grain of salt, and anything we're talking about with one-day OTAs and all of that. But it was good to see them not screwing around with the offensive line. And, you know, if you want to take issue with Braxton Jones being a left tackle, that's totally cool, because I have taken issue with it. I think if you want to take issue with Tevin Jenkins moving to left guard and leaving it open to Nate Davis, who wasn't even there, that's fine. But there was something about it that felt static and like stay the same, be right, and hopefully that will be a thing of the future. I do think Nate Davis will, you know, he'll be in camp, training camp, that is. And who knows, maybe he'll be there next week and playing right guard. It was nice to see. I mean, Jatari Carter, who was a Bears, was he a fifth-round pick last year? No, he was a seventh-round pick out of Southern. Got a little playing time last year. It was interesting to see that with Nate Davis not being there, that it was, okay, the guy that they're putting in here, and Jatari Carter is not going to be a starter on opening day, but it was good to see that they see something in Jatari Carter, and Ryan Poles digs his seventh-round offensive lineman. and your guy, old Doug Kramer from Illinois, was back out there, too. A lot of people you know, I've had people intermittently asking me about him over the last, hey, okay, how's Doug Kramer from the area? How's he doing? The center from Illinois. He's back out there. So, and he's still a center. That's what I can tell you. He's still Doug Kramer. He's still from Chicago. And, you know, who knows, man, with Cody White here at center, which I'm probably the best option right now. I agree with that, but I'm just not completely comfortable. We'll see what's in store for Doug Kramer. I'm not predicting old Doug Kramer to be starting on opening day either.
Or young Kramer to be starting either.
Well, he is very young, actually, but for some reason, old is, with a name like Doug Kramer, it just sounds like your old friend. So that's why I call him old Doug Kramer.
There you go. Here's what I take issue with. The whole idea of people calling it the no excuses tour for Justin Fields. There is an excuse everywhere on the offense. I think it is a weak way to approach what's going on. First of all, you ignore the fact that this was at least a 2-year rebuild, if not a 3-year rebuild. And this would only be the second year of that. Second of all, we went through this with Jay Cutler. Remember everything that happened? Position was an excuse for Jay Cutler.
Oh, offensive line?
Yes. Well, okay. We just went through the offensive line, and you created an excuse all the way down the offensive line. You did that in your analysis of the offensive line. Everywhere you look, there's an excuse. But first of all, because they're different, you've created an excuse because they won't know each other. And the excuse will be, well, by next year, they'll really know each other well. They'll know each other's tendencies. They'll know each other's speed. Well, really? Justin Fields might not be here next year. The whole idea of the no excuses tour is stupid. Don't say that ever. I won't let you say that. Okay?
Okay, I won't say that. I think it sounds really dumb. It's almost as bad as the Aerosmith Peace Out Tour, which is actually happening. They're calling it the Peace Out Tour. That's cool. This is your Aerosmith going one last dance through the country and all that. I get it. They're
not
old,
the
man.
Last dance tour. They didn't want to all wear jerseys.
maybe the last dance with Mary Jane tour. Because that's it. Oh, no, wait. They're sober now. They're one of those boring sober bands now, yes. Aerosmith. But, yeah, they're doing that. They're doing that tour, and that's probably possibly the cheesiest sounding tour name I've ever heard, the Peace Out Tour. But I imagine Justin Fields, he probably has heard that utter the no excuses tour. Justin Fields privately must be going, really?
Are you people
hold
idiots?
On a second.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. This is the offense that's going to get me to the Super Bowl?
Timeout.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is better, but you can't look at this, still can't look at this offense and say, yep, now it's a representative NFL offense and it's going to take off, because we don't know. I mean, I'm positive that DJ Moore is going to be good, assuming health, but I'm not positive that Chase Claypool is going to be good. I'm not positive how healthy Darnell Mooney is. He wasn't out there the other day. So, I mean, I'm not positive that, that you're going to have Velus Jones pick up where he left off last season. So there's still a lot of questions to be answered. You know, Khalil Herbert, it's his show. I mean, I think the running backs room looks pretty good with Dante Foreman and Travis Homer. And obviously Khalil Herbert, but to say, to your point, Stevie Sunshine, the idea that they're set and they're locked and loaded and the no excuses tour is ready to roll. The big buses are coming out there and everybody's ready. No, there's still some excuses until further notice.
They're all over the place. I love your image, the idea. Justin Fields is he's reaching for the red flag. He's got the challenge flag on the flag.
Yeah, wait a minute. What a no excuses tour.
Yeah.
What did we turn into the Eagles? What happened here?
that was the hell freezes over tour.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of things that are looking encouraging on paper for the Bears. There's a lot of things that are objectively better for the Bears. But to say that the offense is excuse-proof is ridiculous and silly and insane.
One of the things you heard from, we're talking with Mark Grody, covers the Bears, my friend.
Bears.
The score. Bears. One of the things you heard from Justin Fields, and I don't know what stock you put in. You spent the whole season hearing from him last year.
I did.
I don't know what he said. I don't know what stock you put into it last year, how different he sounds, and what you make of it. But I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about it in case it meant something for the way he sounded or the things he talked about for this week.
He sounded the same. I mean, he's still not going to go up there and try to put on a show or in any way, you know, schmooze the media or anything like that. So he's still very reserved. It's, again, you have to learn with Justin Fields and that it's none of it's personal. It's just the way he is. And, you know, but I mean, some of the things that he said, I liked, like specifically. And, you know, here we go. These are just words, so I understand people listening roll their eyes. But, you know, he did talk about Chase Claypool in a way that I don't think he spoke about or anybody spoke about Chase Claypool last year. And he talked about how basically saying, oh, man, this guy is a different person. He's really improved, you know, as which, you know, you can look at very obviously and say, OK, something was really missing last year. Something was not
production.
Good. Yeah. Chase Claypool was not good in any way, shape or form, I think, is what Justin Fields was saying. You know, he didn't say that, but he said just, whoa, my God, is he different? Is he good? I mean, that's a pretty good way of saying things kind of sucked last year. Uh-huh. And so it was nice to hear that. I asked him specific. I did ask the question, kind of what you're asking. I said, you know, it's year three for you. Are you, you know, comfortable? You know, the answer was feel the most comfortable he's ever felt in every way, shape, or form. So saying the right things. You know, he talked about his comfort level with DJ Moore. You know, DJ Moore talked about that as well. And, you know, nothing, you know, they're not going crazy, no hyperbole. It's just like, hey, we're getting to know each other. And obviously they made a really nice play together in the one OTA. But, yeah, it's the same Justin Fields. And I think that, you know what, I think Justin Fields, sometimes it's like he's sort of like has the same pace as or what's in the fans' heads and maybe even in the media's heads, that he just wants to get out there and show people. And I think he knows he's got to show people because right now it's all talk and he hasn't done enough yet to really, you know, stand up there and be Mr., you know, the gregarious.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not asking him to do a stand-up act. He doesn't give us a good 5 minutes for the Tonight Show. I'm not asking that.
You know what I mean, though? I mean, he's just right. Like, he's there to answer the questions and get the heck out. That's what he is there for. He is doing his responsibilities, which he follows through with. He is thoughtful in some of his answers, but for the most part, sometimes it seems like he just wants to get out of there.
And I know you do, too, so I'm going to give you this. I'm going to leave you with this. It was something that would warm the heart of late beloved John Moon Mullen.
Oh.
Number 58 was worn by Jay Lewenberg. Former Bears offensive Jay Lewenberg.
Man.
Moon, an offensive lineman, was all the requited love you could imagine. It wasn't unrequited, it was requited.
Wow, we're all requited to love offensive linemen. I did not know that Jay Lewenberg was number 58. I just think of the 50s, and I know everything's messed up in the NFL now as far as the numbers go, right. But the 50s are linebackers to me, you know?
All right. Well, I'm just sharing that with you,
Mark. Yeah, Steve. The 50s are linebackers. That's what I said, okay?
All right. Mark will be back at 9:45 or so on Monday on Memorial Day because we'll be doing transition. Me and Mike Esposito will be doing transition. It's suckage to suckage. You get wall-to-wall suckage.
Should we just, like, call all your former suckage partners during that transition? Since there'll be two of us there already, we could probably call Peruke. We could probably get Randazzo on the horn.
Uh-huh.
Who else? If Burnfield, where's he? I have not talked to Jordan Burnfield in way too long.
I know. He's probably at home.
Spiegel
wants nothing to do with us.
No, Spiegel, once he got back locked into the regular lineup, he was like, no, I'm not talking to those guys anymore.
But he went.
He's like, I had, Spiegel's like, I had to do every stupid weekend shift on this station.
It's true.
I know. Can you imagine?
It's true. It was a monument to endurance, what he did with all the different partners, and then showing up on the weekend doing every stupid show, and fewer stupider than Suckage. And he
monument. What did you just call it? A monument?
Monument to endurance.
That is such a great line. A monument to endurance.
That's Spiegel.
Yeah. Yeah, he is, because he just did it, didn't he? And then once he got back in there, so long, suckers.
Yeah, new number. Who dis?
See you,
all
man.
Right, thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Mark Grody covers the Bears for the Score. And like I said, me and Espo will be here on Monday, Memorial Day, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Mark Grody will be here 10 to 12:45. That takes you up to Cubs-Rays pregame. And then the Cubs game. Gabriel Ramirez will be following the Cubs postgame until 8 p.m. Download the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Search 670 The Score and hit play. Plus, you can find us on the smart speaker, too. Just tell your device to play 670 on The Score. Next hour, I'll speak with Vinny Duber of CHGO talking about the Sox. And we'll do Joe Girardi was here on The Score as a courtesy. Thanks to Marquee, we were brought Joe Girardi. He was on with on the Parkins and Spiegel show. I got a story about that before we bring you Joe Girardi. So after this break, we're going to come back with Cultural Zeitgeist, talking about Cubs baseball on the radio. We're going to hear some of the best, what makes radio great, what makes radio, baseball on the radio great. There's a Hall of Famer to be, soon to be inducted, and he's talking with Ron Coomer, and it's spectacular. And then it's not only Pat Hughes' birthday, but there's another Hall of Famer from Chicago. It's his birthday too. We will bring you that and some other cultural zeitgeist news. Saturday Suckage. Thanks for spending part of Memorial Day weekend with me. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage, Stevie Suckage. And so we have this web poll going. We have not updated it. We need you to update it, Cesar Perez, producer who has been reduced to this. We do not know whose cornflakes he urinated in, but he is back. He is here. Cesar, we have, where do people go to the Score Tweeterverse thing?
Sure. Hit us up on at 670 The Score, our Twitter handle there. And so far today with the question, what is this week's rapper's name for yours truly, Steve Rosenblum? Kendrick Lacham.
L'chaim.
There we go.
Kendrick L'chaim.
Trailing at the moment, 32.5% to, looks like it's going to be the winner today, DJ Jazzy Jew, who's at 67.5%.
Yeah,
right
see,
now.
A lot of people getting jiggy with it.
Yeah.
All right. In our cultural zeitgeist portion of the program, this occurred yesterday right here on these very airwaves. And it is, again, one of the joys of listening to baseball and radio. Maybe not everybody in the audience grew up with that. A lot of us did. You appreciate it now. And it happened to be Ron Coomer talking about, and plays going on, right? But Ron Coomer, who's in the booth with Pat Hughes, Hall of Famer to be, enshrined this summer. And they're talking about the bobblehead day, Billy Williams bobblehead day. And Coom's got to get one. Coom and Zach Zaidman, we've got to get one, get it autographed. And like, there's Hall of Fame stuff there. There's Billy Williams, one of the nicest men ever. But being on the radio always seemed to me to be the joy to it could go anywhere. And it did. And here was something from the second inning yesterday with Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, Cubs Radio on the Score.
I was thinking that Zach and I yesterday were kind of chuckling about the bobblehead and on the statue bobblehead that they're doing for Billy. And Zach said, I want one of those. And I go, yeah, so do I. And we need to get them signed. That was the other thing. We want them signed for Billy. And I started thinking about, you know, you Hall of Famers. And thought,
Morrell swings and misses and the count 1-2.
I would think that had to be a good phone call to get from the Whistler.
Absolutely.
I didn't really get it right away. He said 22 has been good for you. I thought, am I wearing a shirt with a number in the back? And then he explained. Unfortunately, he had to explain it to me. Here comes the 2-2 pitch. Pulled on the ground of the hole at short. Backhanded by McClain. Long throw. Good throw. He's got a good arm. And Morrell is going to be out number two. Cubs trail 2-0. And the batter is Matt Mervis.
Ball hit sharply in the hole by Morrell. And we haven't seen a lot of McClain, but boy, he went to the backhand side, catches his ball, plants that right foot, and he's got an arm. He threw a bullet across the diamond to get Morrell.
Mervis hitting 211. He will take a strike. The great Bob Costas, I believe, was the very first person to call.
How about that?
And I picked up the phone. He said, I said, hello, Bob. He says, Pat, don't you have anything better to do today than to talk to me? So it was a very short conversation.
Well, Bob, you are kind of in, we are in the middle of something. Could you call back later?
Yeah, exactly. Here's a swing and a miss by Mervis, the count 1-2. I heard from my former partner in Milwaukee, Bob Uecker, within an hour of getting the call from Cooperstown. Here's the 1-2. And Bob had a funny line. I said, Bob, I do think, since you were the first ex-player that I worked next to, I think I learned more baseball from you than any other person. He said, you know what? I should have tried to learn the game myself before I tried to teach you.
That's just great. It's radio, baseball on the radio, and you have a Hall of Famer. Pat Hughes is wonderful. You get the play-by-play. He and Coom have a wonderful relationship, just terrific repartee on the air. And I just love that whole thing. The story, the way Pat Hughes can tell a story. It's Pat Hughes' birthday today. It is another Hall of Famer's birthday today. Chicago Hall of Famer. And here's a highlight from his career.
Thomas drills one to deep left field. If it's fair, it's out of here by a mile, and it is fair. Well, that's one of the things the crowd of 50,000 comes to see. The big hurt, putting the hurt on the National League.
How unusual is this? The first All-Star game played at Comiskey Park in 1933, and this is the first home run ever hit by a White Sox player.
Tim McGarver. Wasn't so captain obvious, but that was Al Michaels. That was a 1995 All-Star game. Frank Thomas, he turns 55. Double nickel today, Frank Thomas, a big hurt. 55 today. And I will tell you this, because so much was made of you heard Michaels and Tim McGarver. And Tim McGarver became captain obvious and just was devolved into almost a parody of himself. When he was with Al Michaels and they extended the boundaries of what a play-by-play guy should do so that the analyst could get into more of it, I thought Al Michaels did it best, set a standard with Tim McGarver. Before Tim McGarver became a joke and a punchline and a parody of himself, listening to those guys do baseball, and Al Michaels was smart enough to know, if I go here, I can do the obvious stuff, and we can let Tim do what Tim does. And it was great. Okay, also in the cultural zeitgeist, you saw the Reds, or the Cubs, and all sorts of position players were used yesterday. And the road teams had the greatest run differential day in baseball history since 1900. And certainly, you had the Cubs and Sox part of it, because the Cubs gave up 9 runs to the road team, and the White Sox as a road team scored 12, and they were a +9. Earlier in the week, when they have position players pitching, because it's Toronto 20 and Tampa Bay 1, Luke Raley's on the mound, and he's pitching to Vlad Guerrero. And he struck out Vlad Guerrero, who then took the ball and autographed it. Luke, you got me. And he signed it Vlad Guerrero. Oh, my goodness. I love that. Vlad Guerrero, a sense of time, sense of place. 29 years ago, we'll close cultural zeitgeist with this. 29 years ago, at Cannes in France, at the film festival, Pulp Fiction debuted. I don't know why Caesar was. You were a little surprised. 29 years ago? Really? 30 years? 30? Yeah. It still seems good and fresh, and it was legendary storytelling, a breakthrough way to create a move to bring a movie to life, to tell a story, to twist it around. And it featured some the Tarantino group of tremendous actors. The sound of that movie for me has always been the guy in the first scene, the guy in this scene.
Now I dare you. I double dare you.
Say what again? English, bleep, bleep, bleep. Do you speak it? This is some serious gore. Me and Vince would have been happy with Taster's Choice. But this is Jimmy got us some serious gourmet. Well, Samuel L. Jackson, angry as he was in that whole thing, angry as he was in that scene, was not undue. It wasn't all acting. Because it turns out that during his audition for the movie, a crew member mistakenly called him Mr. Fishburne. So he was angry, and he did have some fast food that he'd bought earlier, and he walked in with it. An executive later said he walked in and just started sipping that shake. I was scared bleepless. Somebody the motivation for part of that scene for Samuel L. Jackson is it was called Mr. Fishburne. But he would later go on, I want to say it was Letterman, and he would come to grips with it and learn and live with it. And in his way, Letterman goes, Samuel L. What does the L stand for? And without missing a beat, Samuel L. Jackson said, Lawrence Fishburne. Gotta love that. All right. Take a break. When we come back, the 12-3 winners yesterday in Detroit, Tim Anderson, Johan Moncada. Hey, Andrew Vaughn. Look at you, Andrew Vaughn. He lives. Let's see how much this monster can live. We'll talk to Vinny Duber of CHGO, covers the White Sox, writes about him for CHGO. This is Saturday Suckage. Thanks for being here. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you. Say what one more time.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.